Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascists.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. Man. What a great last week of baseball, man.
Oh, man. We did it.
We got through the abbreviated season.
You know, it does in the record books, it's a full season. So yeah. I'm just happy that we got through it. Because now it's, no matter what, they're going to finish. They're not going to not finish October. I think the main hurdle is getting 60. We are back.
Yes. Welcome to the show, the West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, Twitter at West Coast Bias BB.
You can also find us at Facebook at West Coast Bias Baseball.
And I'm excited. This is...
Yeah, this was fun. It was short. It was sweet. It wasn't quite enough. It seems like it's never enough. But usually, you know, we have another 4 months to go once we get to this point of the season. And
exactly.
I mean, play 60 games, we got another 102 to go. But
it's basically like June 1st right now. Like, it's basically June, and that's okay.
But unlike being June 1st, we can legitimately start talking about what's going to happen in the playoffs. If the playoffs started tomorrow, what's going to happen? Oh, wait,
which
playoffs do start tomorrow.
Indeed they do, man. Oh, man. As you can tell, I am pretty excited. If not just for the fact that the Dodgers don't have to play the Giants in round one, I don't think you're too happy about that.
No, I'm not. I must say I am disappointed that the Giants season came to an end with very much of a whimper.
Right.
But it wasn't... Overall, I'm not disappointed. I'm not. The Giants did very well, much better than was expected, and they
that is true.
They put together a fun, entertaining 60 games of baseball, and they were in it right up to the last pitch of the season.
Quite literally. I'm sure you saw that last pitch.
Oh yeah, bad call, and I don't think there'd be too many people there would agree with me. Even some Milwaukee fans out there that I know about said that was a bad call, and arguably it was Milwaukee that benefited most from that call.
And now it wasn't a strike called the ball.
It was a clear ball called a strike.
Yes. Now I wasn't watching the game, but I did see the clip, and of course many thumbnails of the multiple angles of that pitch. Did what's his name? It's Bane. I just call him Bane now because your coach, the Giants manager. What's his name? He was a Dodger for many years. I already forgot his name.
Kapler.
Yeah, thank you. Did Kapler get ejected? I guess the game was over.
The game was over.
Yeah,
there's nothing to be ejected from.
Yeah,
you can't eject him from the postseason. That was
done. To at least go out on a high, low note.
He was barking out of the dugout, as were several of the Giants, and it stunned, I think, even the Padres catcher.
Where does he get those masks? The Villain Surplus Store, or
I don't know. You know,
it's
I mean,
skin tight. You can see his teeth through those things. It's kind of terrifying, honestly. But, you know, I can't find a mask that fits me that actually is comfortable. So maybe I should try that one. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe you know, all Gabe Kapler size mask will fit you.
Yeah. I have a gigantic head. It's actually kind of scary. I wear a 7 7/8. So
not as big as Bruce Bowen.
Almost there. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably true. But, you know, give me 30 more years and maybe and a few more martinis. you know, I might get there. The NL Central. Just ripping it up. And, of course, ripping the hearts out of the Giants, in a sense. But all three teams that could have claimed the eighth seed in the NL lost yesterday. Nobody showed up. And, unfortunately, because of that, there are two sub-500 teams in the postseason this year.
So
for the first time ever.
We have a possibility that we could have a sub-500 World Series.
No. Absolutely not. Never. Never. How dare you even... bring that up.
I'm not saying that I want it or that it will happen. I'm just saying that it's possible.
It would be the Brewers or the Trashdros.
Right.
Brewers have a tough row to hoe in front of them with the Dodgers, and they've given the Dodgers some trouble in the past. They've never, at least on recent times, have won that battle. But, you know, three games, anything can happen. If Yelly gets hot, they're a different team. You know,
right, and you know the Brewers, it seems like they should, that their expectations as low as the Giants' expectations were coming to the season. I think the Brewers' expectations were high just based on the last couple of years. They were right there, and it just didn't seem like they ever really got going this year. They had a couple good stretches, but they weren't really consistent, and they certainly didn't end with a winning record.
When your number one guy and one of the best hitters in the National League is just cold as ice for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and really to the end, did he even get above 200? I mean, I'm assuming he did, Yelich. I should probably know. But, he hit some jacks and everything, but the fact is, like, if that guy's not, carrying his weight, it has ripple effects on the rest of the team. You know, Keston Hiura was swinging out of his shoes this season, and last year he was pretty, conservative in his at-bats. And this year he's just swinging at everything, a lot of strikes, a lot of strikeouts, and that seemed to hurt the team a lot. Obviously, it did hurt the team because they didn't even end up over 500, but in a sense, they played better against their division than the Giants had. So
that was the difference in the thing. And going into that that last week and the Saturday and Sunday game, the Giants had to win one of them, and they failed to do so. Even if they would have won both games of that doubleheader, which they almost did,
they just had to win one.
That would have been the difference. Everything else being equal.
Yeah, if the Brewers lost, which they did, all the Giants had to do was win, and the Giants lost. If the Brewers and the Giants lost, all the Phillies had to do was win, and the Phillies lost.
Right.
They had it set up on a tee, the Phillies. Both teams lose. I'm like, oh, great. And then they just got destroyed.
Yeah, all any of those three teams had to do was win.
Yeah.
And none of them did.
Yelich hit 205, sorry, by the
205,
way.
205, so he didn't make it.
I sold him short.
No.
Yeah, he's basically Mendoza. That's still under the Mendoza line, right? Mendoza's like 210 or 215 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Or 208, I don't know. It's something weird. Yeah, MLB, just please reassure me that MLB does not want to keep this format until next year. Because I know that they were saying definitely not next year, but maybe 2022.
It's intriguing, it's interesting. I think I'm glad they're doing it this way because the season was so short
for this season. Okay, fine, for this season,
but
even then it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I just, we were talking off air, perhaps, maybe it was on air last time we met, suggested maybe this wild card series, the three game series, should only go three games. Lower seeded team wins the first game.
Well, even then, I don't think it should. I think the number one seed should only have to win one game.
Right.
If the eight seed wins game one, if seed one wins game two, it's over. You know?
Right.
That's it. Like, that's what it should be. It shouldn't be a best of. It should just be
The wild card name wins to win two.
Yeah.
The division winner needs to just win one.
100%. If they ever try to do anything like this in the future, and maybe they should do this with the wild card. I'm doing air quotes here. Series, because it's one game.
And it did. During the regular season. This format certainly did add quite a bit of intrigue to the last week, where there's a lot more teams in the mix, a lot more permutations about what might happen based on who wins and who loses.
And that was a lot of fun. It's just it's not going to be that close in a full season. I mean, it could probably not,
but it could be.
Right, like in 17, right? Yeah, the game 163 against the Dodgers against the Rockies. That was nail-biting, and that was not fun, but it was actually pretty amazing. That was like one of the greatest days of baseball I can remember, honestly. I mean,
because
hasn't really gone so well for the Dodgers the last few years. But, you know, on the plus side, the Dodgers finish as the only team to lose fewer than 20 games. 43-17. Yeah, I mean, even the most positive Dodger predictors, I don't think, would have thought.
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable stretch. They came out of the gate hot, and they stayed hot. They were an incredibly tough team to beat, and will probably continue to be a tough team to beat. They did finish the season with a better winning percentage than the 0-1 Mariners.
Really?
By one percentage
point. The 0-1 Mariners, the greatest team of all time?
The greatest team of all time. 0-1 Mariners finished that season with a 7-1-6 winning percentage. The Dodgers just finished with a 7-1-7 percentage.
Oh, yeah!
So what you're saying is the Dodgers, the 2020 Dodgers, are the greatest team of all time?
I'm far from saying that.
It makes a lot of sense, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it.
The 2020 Dodgers need to sustain this winning percentage over another 102 games, and then we'll talk about them being the greatest team ever.
102? Well, it seems like it's 102 games in this postseason, so who knows?
I'll give you
a little positive news, all right, for the reciprocal on this the hottest day of the month. We always do the podcast on the hot. We always choose the hottest day to do the show. I don't know why. The Giants did finish with a +2 run differential. They scored 299 runs while giving up 297. So hey, that's pretty good, because they haven't done that in a long time.
It is. No, it was good. It was definitely the best part of the season, was to see the Giants' bats awaken for the first time in, well, I don't know, I can't even count back that far.
No. It Bonds? Years? Yeah. And Belt, still, he's kept going, right? I mean, I wasn't watching all those games, but his OPS is still in the top 10 for all of baseball this year.
I mean, He did very well. He did finish the team. He wasn't the team leader in home runs or anything like that, but he's always been able to get on base. His power consistency has been what has held Belt back more than really anything else. He's had a phenomenal eye and has always been able to get on base.
Yeah, but his power, though, he actually found the power stroke this season.
It would seem so, and, it remains to be seen.
Let me see.
Whether this was just a 60-game fluke, if he's turned the corner, we'll see what happens next year, second year with Gabe Kapler and his team of hitting coaches.
Now, I never would have guessed that Wilmer Flores, out of everybody on the Giants, would lead the team in home
runs. That seems very strange.
Never would have guessed that. That guy bothers me as much as Ryan Braun, maybe. I mean, maybe not at a personal level like Ryan Braun, but certainly on just an aesthetic level. That guy crying. There's no crying in baseball. I mean, anyway, that's all I'll ever remember about that guy, is him literally crying while playing shortstop. Because he got traded. Not because he had a compound fracture in his leg or because his child got like hit by a car. No, it's because he got traded from the Mets. Yeah. Come on, bro. Like, I thought he was gone. I thought he got laughed out of the league. Now, you can send your hate mail to me. I know I'm bullying this guy, but come on. I mean, really? Anyway.
I mean, most people are excited to get traded from the Mets.
He's shutting me up. He's, well, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Anyway, you know, he had the last laugh because he finished with 12 home runs for the team. But yeah, Brandon Belt had the highest OPS of the entire team. So, you know, he still had 10. He had 10, or sorry, he had 9. Oof. Almost 10.
But
that's 20 for a regular season if it, you know.
At least 20, yeah.
Right. So that's not bad.
Maybe 25.
All right, I'll give you 25. Except for that he would have been out with an injury or a concussion or something before the end of the season anyway. Now, oh God, the wild card series, man.
Staying healthy is definitely a big contributing factor. There's no doubt. But hey, before we get too far down the rabbit hole of the upcoming playoffs, I still would like to acknowledge two teams that did make this postseason tournament in pretty impressive fashion. One being the Atlanta Braves.
Ooh.
Had their 20th division title win, which is a major league record.
Wow, I didn't know we'd been doing divisions that long. Yeah, that makes
sense. Well, divisions came in in the 69, I believe. 1969 was the first year of the divisions.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Where division play, and there was before then just the best record went to the World Series. There was, you know, there was no LDS.
Or LCS, for that matter, right?
Well, definitely, yeah, LCS. Definitely no LDS, let alone, yeah. But so that's pretty amazing. They've won the most. Of course, they spent that whole decade of the 90s winning every year. And only have one World Series to show for it. But that's a whole other issue, and maybe they'll be able to correct it this year.
Well, before you know, the Dodgers, with their 8th consecutive, will be knocking on the door of Atlanta soon, hopefully. I mean, you know, we'll see.
We shall see. Only time will tell. And then, of course, San Diego Padres.
Ooh.
Yes, in those 14 years since the Padres last made the postseason. So congratulations to them and their fans. Welcome back to
the land of the living. Yeah, it's, you know, and that's the other thing about this, the whole brackets going and not, after the first round, the wild card, it's all brackets. It's not about seeds anymore. So if... who is it? Who's playing? So if the Padres beat St. Louis,
right?
Even though they're the third seed, the two seed?
The Padres are the fourth seed.
Fourth seed. The Dodgers, if they beat Milwaukee, will still play them, even though there's going to be some lower seeds out there. Cincinnati, Marlins, they're not going to be playing them. They're playing the Padres no matter what. So the Dodgers could get the Padres round two.
Right.
Which would be pretty interesting because those teams really know each other and it could really be anybody's series.
It really is.
And
I think one of the most intriguing aspects of this postseason format is unique to this year is that all these teams in the first round have not played each other all year.
So
I'm really pleased with how the seeding ultimately worked out.
Wait, in the National League, not
in the American League
as well.
What
about the Blue Jays and the Rays? They had.
I guess that would be the exception, but
no, it's true because the Central is just dominating.
Right,
it's crazy. It's insane, and that makes sense. You know, when you look around, they're the only two teams right that haven't played each other. So in a lot of ways, the Rays have all the advantage there because they have the best pitching. And
they've been beating up on the Blue Jays all year.
Yeah.
I think that it would be a fun postseason just because of the lack of familiarity, especially in the first round. We're going to see how good some teams really are and how bad some teams really are.
You're right. I'm excited. This is what we were talking about last week, I think, too. It'll be like the very beginning again. You know, there might be some blowout games. It might be like the beginning of the season, I mean, you know.
Right.
Like some of these guys haven't seen each other, or some of these guys might get blown away by Garrett Cole or something.
And there also could be some very close games. We could very easily, we'll see some 1-0 games just because no pitchers have seen these hitters and vice versa. And yeah, so I'm excited. I'm ready for it to begin.
Man, it really does come down to this wild card series, you know. And you know, we can look at the numbers usually in terms of how important it is to win game one of any series, but obviously there's really no data on three game series, with, you know, the exception of maybe a handful of three game pennant tiebreakers, you know, that were pretty rare, that have been around, you know, haven't been around since, you know, the middle of last century. But what we can do is look at three game series in the regular season, you know, to sort of through the last 10 years, let's say, to sort of get a feel on how important winning game one in a three game series is. Now, obviously, just by thinking about it, it seems like it's extremely important. And of course it is, but the numbers back it up. You know, now what you find, what's that?
I was going to say, with winning the first game, this is not a Monty Hall situation. You're not going to get your
door number two.
Your odds aren't going to improve by picking door number two.
Now, what about the mystery box? You know, no. Always go for the mystery box. No, never mind. Don't do that, because the mystery box can never be a car, right? Anyway, what you find,
well, it depends on the size.
It could be a car keys. Yeah, it could be like a fob or something, right? Anyway, the winner of game one, unsurprisingly, goes on to win 76% of the time. Looking over the last 10 years, over 5,000 games or 5,000 series, I should say, the home team won 79% of these three-game series after winning the first game, and the road team won 72% after winning the first game. So, you know, I guess this may make home field advantage slightly more useful than I originally thought. And even without fans in attendance, you know, having a slight edge in such a closely contested series will most likely have benefits. You know, at first, in the beginning of the shortened season, it appeared as if home field didn't seem to matter because the numbers didn't really show that it had. But then the numbers now have shown that, in fact, home field has been an advantage so far, with the home field seeing a .548 win percentage just through this 60-game season. So, okay. You know, since there are no in-series off days until the World Series, perhaps teams with the best ace will have the better chance of winning the Wild Card Series, you know. Thinking of teams like Bieber with the Indians, of course, Giolito, White Sox, even Darvish, you know, with the Cubs. I mean, and then, well, obviously, of course,
Bueller,
you know,
Bueller.
Game one,
Bueller.
Dodgers will not be starting Kershaw. They will be starting Bueller, and I think a lot of that is just power. You know, it's good to just blow people away right away. Kershaw's velocity has gone up this season, which is great, and that's why he's been extremely effective this season, and the Dodgers, clearly the Dodgers' best pitcher.
Right.
But to set a sort of tone, when you have to face a guy who throws 99 with movement, and then game two you got to face Kershaw, you know, I think it's more mental than anything, I think it's a great decision.
Kershaw is such a dominant pitcher that if you start him first, then you say, okay, we just, you know, we get past Kershaw, then we have a shot.
Right.
But you start someone, you know, of Bueller's caliber, and then that's a tough game, and then you got Kershaw. It's like, oh, you know, that's got to be demoralizing.
Especially righty lefty and flame throwing righty and just, you know, surgeon lefty, and the Brewers lineup is lefty heavy. Right. So if Bueller can mow them down game one, we got two games to play with, you know, and Dustin May showed his mettle yesterday. I mean, that guy's just insane. Tony Gonsolin had six-inning game at least last week. Lights out, you know, two hits. I mean, the long men, in the sense, for the Dodgers, are looking stellar. Now, hopefully it doesn't have to get to that point. Hopefully we just make quick work of them, get an extra day off. You know, this is like the one off season where days off are extremely valuable, you know.
They are, and there looks like there will be a little bit of a gap between series to sort of reset, recharge.
Couple days, but these guys are used to having a day every other game, you know. Play two, get a game off, play two, get a game off, you know, or I guess play three, get 2 days off maybe, but But now,
well, but a lot of times the teams will go a stretch playing, you know, 11, 12 games in a row between days off. And that happens regularly during the regular season.
Yeah.
You know, but it does happen.
What was it, the 04? The Rockies, and the Rockies swept divisions, swept the CS, and then got swept in the World Series. Was that five?
That's been known to happen.
Because they had way too much time off. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it happened to the 2012 Tigers.
Mm. Yeah.
They swept their first two series, got in, you know, waited for the Giants to come into to town, and then got swept.
That's brutal, man. That's so brutal.
You know, that does happen if you win too quickly. But there's not going to be, it doesn't seem like there's going to be that big of a gap, but
shouldn't be a problem this season. Right. And I think that's actually kind of a good thing, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, you have two teams in the postseason that had a big chunk of time off in the middle of the season.
The Cardinals
and
the Marlins?
The Marlins and the Cardinals, yeah. But both of those two teams had a huge break, a two-week break where they didn't play any games. And they still both of those teams still finished the season strong and with a good enough record to make the postseason.
I'm in a bit of shock still about the Marlins and
that's what the Marlins did. It totally impressive.
It's kind of amazing, honestly. Who do they got? They have the Cubs, so you know. They have their work cut out for them, but
They will. I don't think they'll get past the first round, but
you never know.
Never know. I don't think they will. Well, we'll get into the predictions here in just a minute. But I got a Bryce Harper fact of the day for you,
really?
If you're interested. Yeah, ran across this.
That's a clown question.
Bryce
bro.
Harper last week became the fourth ever player. To have two home runs and three intentional walks in the same game. Of the three other people to do it,
intentional walks.
None of them were Barry Bonds. Three intentional walks and
you could have
two
won a
home
beer
runs
off of me.
In one game.
I would have. My first guess is Barry Bonds.
Yeah,
he's Mickey
not
Mantle,
on the list.
Maybe Roger Maris.
No.
0-3. Wow.
This is arguably a Barry Bonds treatment, but. You know, Barry Bonds was never allowed to hit two home runs in a game if they're going to walk
right.
him
that makes sense.
For three other times.
I mean, maybe like
Barry
you know,
Bonds
early
might
on.
Barry Bonds might have seen maybe two good pitches to hit, and he would usually hit one of them at least. But
so he's one of four now, or he's one of five?
He's one of four.
All right, give me one more guess here. Oh, Big Mac. How about Mark McGwire?
Mark McGwire didn't earn those that kind of intentional walking.
Well, when you strike out a lot, they'll pitch to you sometimes. I guess. Man. All right. Well, I give up.
Well, we have Albert Pujols, Big AB.
That makes perfect sense.
David Wright.
David Wright.
David Wright hit two home runs and was intentionally walked three times in a game. One time. And the last one was.
I like David Wright. The guy's awesome, but okay.
The last one is probably one that I don't know. I had to look him up to see exactly who he was or what he played for. But it was Clendell Washington.
Ron Washington is related to that kind of.
I don't know if he's any.
Clendell Washington, Glendale Washington,
Glendale Washington. Maybe it is. I just can't read my notes. let me.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I that's like a city in Washington, but I don't know about.
Claudel. Yeah, Claudel.
Oh, Claudel.
Claudel Washington.
Oh, okay.
He played
the A's.
He played with the A's, the Yankees, and the Braves, a number of different teams over a good 15 years from More than that. It's from 74 to 1990.
Wow.
Was his career. He played for a long time, but he's one of these people who
that's crazy.
Hit two home runs and got walked
maybe
intentionally
three times
in a game.
He must have been the number eight batter.
Must have been
a National League team.
I think that might be true on a game that was out of control.
We choose truth over facts.
And
that's crazy. So Bryce Harper, you know, he's probably in a lot of those weird stats.
And I think he will
records.
Be because he's one of those type of players. But
when he's hot, he is dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't want to pitch to him either when he's hot. But turns out he's hot less than he's not. So, you know, I say pitch to him.
Totally. We'll pitch to everyone. It's much more fun that way. And another fluke of this six-game season, I think, the Chicago White Sox.
Man, and I think we predicted this, by the way. Hold on, before you get into that.
Yeah.
Their success going into this league, or maybe I had high hopes, but continue, sorry.
Well, say they became the, I'm not saying that making the playoffs was the fluke, but the fluky part of their success is they became the first team ever to finish unbeaten by a left-handed starter. The entire season, they made 14 left-handers started against the White Sox this season, and all 14 of those left-handers lost. Well, yeah.
Wow.
The game was won by the White Sox in that instance. Whether or not that pitcher actually lost, I don't have. But
ooh, man, that's crazy. That's never happened before.
I don't believe it's ever happened before that a team has not lost against the left-handed starter during the course of a season. But of course, the season is only
But that's
60
still,
games, and it's only
it
14 starts.
Double-digit starts, man. Yeah. That is not bode well for Sean Manaea. And, you know, as much as I like, I like the White Sox. I like, they're a fun team to watch in a lot of ways.
They were.
Jose Abreu, and we'll get into this in a second. I think he's, like, the sneakiest, like, one of the most underrated players in baseball.
Oh, easy.
Along the lines of, like, an Arenado, although Arenado's defense always has him sort of in the limelight. But Abreu is just quietly always putting up 290.
RBIs,
30 home runs.
It's tough to get attention. You have to make a lot of noise to get attention on the south side of Chicago.
Well, you have to be Tim Anderson, who I love Tim Anderson. You know, I know he's a bit polarizing to a lot of old fans. I'm assuming Aubrey Huff hates him. That was almost a spit take. I got you mid-drink right there. That was pretty good. We need to start doing a video blog because that was pretty good. You know, he and Trevor Bauer are sort of like of the same ilk. You know, they're both, they want to grow the game because they love it so much, but they're also playing in an old-timey game, especially when we have a decrepit old man, at least at heart, in Rob Manfred leading things. No emotion, no individuality. You know, you cannot paint your shoes unless it has, you know, a corporate logo on it. You know, it's like, it's crazy. Yeah. But so it's nice and refreshing to see a guy like Tim Anderson and the White Sox do what he does, and Trevor Bauer as well, too, just being who they are. Right. And it's also
so
cool to see these central,
the
central teams that we've been, you know, shitting on, for lack of
a
term, for a while now.
I believe the term especially
good.
Appropriate during an election year are flyover states.
Yeah,
the central divisions this year have made some noise. I mean, we got three teams from the American League Central and four teams from the National League Center make the postseason tournament.
It's pretty cool.
It means there's a lot of good baseball being played in the central divisions. Can't ignore the flyover states in baseball. There's some good teams.
It's good for them. You know, I like that. And the Yankees almost becoming, they're almost becoming like the seventh or eighth seed there for, I mean, they were on the fence a little
bit.
Yeah,
they were in danger of not even making the postseason. Three, 4 weeks ago, they might not have made it.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true.
And the Yankees did have a lot of problems with injuries this year too. That affected them, but
that's true. I am, though. I didn't know that stat about the lefties, so now I am worried about the A's, because I do still want to see an A's Dodgers World Series. even though I've been wanting this for 16 years, however long I've lived in the Bay Area. And just because it would be a lot easier for me to go to the World Series, because, you know, just a BART ride away from the Coliseum and open right, up Mount Davis, there's 65,000 seats, so it's
of course
it'll cheaper.
Happen when you have to get to
exactly.
to Dallas
exactly.
to be
I know.
Able to do it. So it's a little bit farther
that's
of
my
a trek.
Fate, I'm sure. So now I'm almost convinced that the A's are going to win it, and I guess hopefully that means that the Dodgers win the pennant as well, and then it's anybody's game, you know. The people who are rooting for teams that didn't make it are calling this season irrelevant, bogus, you know, a fraud, a sham, an asterisk. But it doesn't matter, man. And the players playing do not feel that. You could see the excitement.
I think ultimately getting to the postseason and winning the postseason is going to be a lot regardless of the length of the season.
100%.
What I think may... get the asterisks and the yeah buts are the things like the Dodgers winning percentage
that's
overall.
That's it.
And if any other like percentage based records, or you know, they're just going to be interesting footnotes asterisks because missing 102 games, anything a lot can happen in 102 games.
Right.
You know, someone said that. I guess it was in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, reading the papers, suggested that, you know, the Giants did very well and their bullpen did a lot of good, but was seeming to run out of gas this, you know, certainly this final week. They did fine over 60 games, but you extend this out, they probably wouldn't have been as good over the length of the season. Right. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that. It's like there's a lot of baseball missing. A lot of baseball missing as compared to how it's always been. Even when before we got to 162, there was still, you know, 120, double the amount of games that we played up to 154, and then in 162, there's always been a lot more baseball played. When we start talking about those type of records.
Now, that actually is, you know, that reminds me of something I've been thinking about just this last week. And I'm sure people have been thinking about this all season, but it didn't really seem to hit home until recently and until seeing the joy in the players and the fact that, you know, a lot of them are still healthy and they still have a lot of energy going into the postseason. And I was wondering if this is going to affect future negotiations when asked if the players would prefer a shortened season indefinitely, not 60 games or even 100, but maybe even like going back to 154 to 150, you know? I mean, it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility, and it almost seems like nowadays it might even be, I hate to say it, but better for them. I mean, better for the game itself.
Right.
Dare I say? I mean,
well,
you know, I don't even. Yeah, that's
it makes sense. And it makes sense in a lot of ways because, you know, basketball the last few years, there's been a lot of emphasis on workload and workload management. I mean, these guys, I mean, basketball. These guys are phenomenal athletes, and they go out there night after night for 80 games. That's a lot of games.
It's a lot of games.
To be basically doing shuttle runs for an hour. It's essentially what they do. It's a grind. It can be a real grind over the thing. So there's been a lot of emphasis on picking and choosing the games in which the players play, and very few of the stars now play all 82 games of a basketball season, that they take particular nights off during the season so they get adequate rest so they can stay healthy throughout the entire season in their huge postseason tournament that lasts almost as long as the regular season.
It's like the MLB this season, yeah.
Like the MLB this season, but on a much grander scale, it seems like, in the NBA, because every game or every series. Well, more of the series are 7-game series, and they have a lot of
time off in between,
right. Even during the inner series time off as well. So it tends to drag on, but there's that, and this sort of thinking is, I think, starting to make its way into baseball because just the sheer number of games. So it makes sense if you cut back on the number of games, it'll allow for more days off for guys to rest and recuperate, not necessarily injured, but need, you know, time off.
The muscles rebuild. You're saying still have 180 day schedule, but only play 150 or so,
right?
And have more days off.
A few more days off.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
It'll also allow room if they want to do something like the World Baseball Classic, Olympic Baseball, the what we talked about last episode, with the minor league tournament kind of thing. It'll allow more room in the schedule for things like that without conflicting so much with the greater daily grind over 6 months playing every day.
That's interesting. Because I was thinking just shortened season, play sort of the same pace, but you're saying slow down the pace. Now, I don't know if I'd be really curious to see, but I think my suspicion is that the players would, if it was a choice, either play a more drawn out season with fewer games, same amount of time, or start a little bit later, have a little longer spring training, end a little bit sooner, and have more days off maybe for the postseason. I think they would prefer still playing almost every day and then maybe just play fewer games. That's what I think, because a lot of these guys get burned out toward the end. Now, maybe if they had days off where they didn't have to sit during a game day, which is what they do now,
right,
and they didn't have to have the sort of, you know, have that feeling against them, that stigma that... Because most guys want to play every day.
Most guys play every day. And you play every day. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you put a day off in between every series, is that cut the number of games, put a day off in between series, a full travel day between every series, everyone gets a day off, and no one has to sit.
Yeah, it's really weird, man, because you would think that they would be thinking about this 50, 60 years ago when, like, nutrition was garbage and, like, you know, the knowledge of body physiology 50,
60
was
years ago, they were still just playing 154 games.
Right. But that's still only, you know, I mean, that's not...
I mean, it's...
that. It's 8 games, right?
But,
I mean,
but
it's
the,
not like it's
but
that
the,
many
those
fewer
8 games,
games
they
a week.
Still went from April, the beginning of April, to the end of September.
Now, they weren't traveling nearly as much either, which
no,
is also
there was,
why...
there was less teams, yes, yeah. and they were traveling less, yes. But
these guys...
It's still playing a very physical game.
It's crazy.
Every single day.
I know. You would think that nowadays guys would be able to play 200 games
but
without
then,
any effort.
And then
but...
you also look at, you know, the guys, they didn't make as much money. They all had jobs in the ass.
pretty much, yeah. If you go
off
back
season,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, they did different things to stay in shape. Many of them played other sports.
You see, and this is a common theme, yeah.
Cross training, using other muscle groups instead of just working the same muscles over and over again.
Yeah. These sport-specific injuries, yeah.
Sport-specific injuries. I mean, any piece of physical equipment, if you overuse it, it will wear out quicker than something you don't use every day.
Yeah.
Even something like your guitar strings.
Sure.
If you play every day, you're going to go through more strings than if you play every other day.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. No, yeah, it's true. It's really strange. Because it seems like guys are more brittle, but... Yeah, and again, this is a common thing we've been talking about for years here. And I initially just thought, oh, these guys are just working out too much. You know, you look at the Stantons, the Judges, the, you know, Vogelbox, and the...
Yeah. Not working out too much. It's kind of a hard time believing you can work out too much. But
well,
if you work out in the wrong way...
With steroids, though, it might be a little... You know, you might be better off with steroids if you're working out that much just for muscle regeneration
Sure.
and stuff.
Maybe,
but obviously that's not going to happen. So yeah, I don't know. That was my sneaking suspicion for years, and my conspiracy weird thing that I was thinking, not a conspiracy, but trying to think of an alternative reason why a guy seemed to be getting hurt more. Because the initial thought is, oh, these guys are just babies, and the guys used to be tougher back in the day. And maybe that is true to a certain extent. But now I'm starting to think that it isn't just that they're working out too much. But yeah, like you're saying, like they've only done baseball. And like when they go to college or even high school, they're like, you pick one sport.
Right.
There are no more Deion Sanders left. Yeah. There are no more Bo Jacksons.
You can play baseball or football.
Right. You can play basketball or baseball. Yeah.
You can. I mean, I get it on one level because of scheduling conflicts and so much time with the team and practice and all of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're not on the team, you should still be allowed to be able to work out with the team.
Yeah, and maybe it is good. Maybe the Mason Saunderses of the world as well are. It is somewhat beneficial, you know, to have extracurricular activities, you know. But I know in a lot of these guys' contracts, it specifically or explicitly prohibits scooters, motorcycles,
skiing.
Yeah, who was it? Ron Gant, I think, got his contract revoked for getting in a motorcycle accident back in the '80s or whatever.
Something. There's a whole Jeff Kent controversy back.
Jeff Kent. You know, and well, okay, yeah.
So it's there's something to it. I say, you know, let him.
All right, yeah, we're going off the rails here. Hunter Pence, speaking of scooter riding
ex-baseball
players.
Oh, yes. He's hanging them up.
Now, was his presence in McCovey Cove yesterday a blessing or a curse?
I don't know. It made me smile, though, that his first full day of retirement, he's out enjoying himself drinking beer at the ball game.
He had a mask on a boat. I give him a lot of credit for that.
And, you know, I don't know if it was I think... You know, I also couldn't help but think, you know, back in, I guess it was 2012. He gave that inspiring speech. Hey, you know, I want to play one more game with you guys. Let's go out and win this game so we can play again tomorrow. They needed that. I think the Giants needed that yesterday to get motivated because they really did seem flat. They came out Saturday and Sunday, both.
I know, yeah.
It just seemed very flat. There was no, we got to win this game. We can get into the postseason. There was no of that urgency.
Yeah. I'm shocked because they see the Dodgers. Like, that should have been enough motivation to just win one game that weekend.
One game and we can go spoil it for the Dodgers.
Yeah. I know. I mean, and again, I'm glad that they didn't, but, man, so I guess it wasn't enough. Maybe, and obviously they're not going to let him in the clubhouse now, which is kind of sad too, because I was looking at, you know, Matt Chapman with the A's, obviously he's out for the season. And normally a guy, if he's injured, would still travel with the team and support him, you know, emotionally, right, whatever. But under new COVID rules, he's not allowed to go with the team. So he's going to be watching from California.
Well, unless he's on the roster, even if he's on the injured list, unless there's no reason that he's not going to be well enough to play.
No,
at the end of the thing.
No, they're not letting him. They're not letting anybody travel that's not on the active roster. You're not going.
So I thought that if you were on, you could be included if you went into quarantine. If you thought, then you would be available.
No.
That even if people who are on the injured list,
if he's
could
in, like,
quarantine with the team, stay with the team,
no.
And then if he was available, he could be put into the 28 they're going with.
Right, but he has no chance of playing, so he's not.
Right, so he's not going to be well enough to play by October 20th, wouldn't be, there'd be no reason for him to.
Yeah, and, you know, a similar thing with Tito, man. That's kind of sad. Terry Francona isn't going to be able to manage his own team going into the postseason. You know, he entered the bubble with the team last week to give them the option to bring him, you know, back to the dugout to coach for the postseason. But after more consideration over the weekend, the Indians announced that Sandy Alomar Jr. would continue as acting manager throughout the playoffs. He's, you know, his recent medical history, and he had a stent inserted. in his intestines or something after they found some blood clots, because he had a lot of gastrointestinal distress, some condition. Yeah. I don't know what it was exactly. Then he had a second procedure. So he's not going to be able to go. It's pretty sad because, I mean, Terry Francona for that team is you know, a stalwart and somebody that they need. It is nice that they do have Sandy Alomar Jr. because, you know, he's a lot of lifeblood in that team as it is. But
certainly a big name as well.
It's just sad because once it starts, you know, if you're in the bubble, you're good. And they let him, but he can't stay. So he's not going to be able to come even if they make it to the World Series, you know.
Yeah.
That's pretty brutal. That's 2020, though. You know, what are you going to do? Now, I'm going to ask you, can the Twins end their playoff win drought?
Well, yes, because they're not starting against the Yankees.
Correct. They do not have to face the Yankees. And they are hoping to end their 16 straight playoff losses by, and it's win-win, destroying the Houston Astros. And I think I can speak for all of America.
Go Twins.
And Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands and Guam and D.C. when I say that everybody outside of Houston, and even probably some people in Houston, are saying go Twins.
Go Twins.
And go for the sweep. Just do it.
Hoo-ah.
I got three.
Win tomorrow. Win the next day.
Yeah.
Rest up to play the A's?
Was that a haiku?
Was it?
Josh Donaldson has a 925 OPS since September 2nd from his return from injury, including 5 home runs, 2 doubles, 14 walks in only 21 games. And since Byron Buxton came off the IL September 1st, he has a 1.022 OPS with 8 home runs. And I shouldn't say little because he's not that little, but Luis Arraez returned from the IL stint by going 6-for-8 with 4 doubles in the final 2 games of the regular season. The Twins are starting the season also with a very hungry Kenta Maeda, who, by the way, was a member of the 2017 Dodgers, of course, and has a very short memory, I would imagine. And he has allowed no more than 3 runs in each of his 11 regular season starts.
Really?
Go Kenta. Wow. And according to Fangraph's WAR, the Twins' rotation ranked 5th in Major League Baseball this year. You know, they got Berrios, they got Pineda, Odorizzi, Rich Hill, who, again, you know, short memory, wore blue in 17. So they have a pretty solid bullpen as well. You know, I think they're actually 3rd in MLB WAR in terms of their bullpen. So, you know, if they can't do it, I don't know who can, and they really need that break, man. And, you know, last year's wild card game against the Yankees? It was, like, one of the greatest games I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a great game. I mean, all those home runs that
nuts.
The Twins had hit, and then
insurmountable lead met. Insurmountable lead met. I think the lead changed, like, 6 times or something in that game. It was crazy.
It was a wild one, to be sure.
Let's hope it's not that wild come tomorrow. Wow, is that tomorrow already?
It is tomorrow already.
Wow. Oh, man. Oh, man, I'm locking the door. I'm turning off my phone. I am dead to the world tomorrow. It's going to be great.
Well, that's you're going to have a little bit more time tomorrow. It's Wednesday that dead to the world, because that's when everyone plays.
Now, today I was lucky enough to be involved with a little live Q&A with Pedro Mora, the Dodgers beat writer for The Athletic. And I asked him whether Kenley Jansen was going to be the de facto first choice for the ninth inning duties, you know, because Kenley's great.
He's been their closer for the last several years.
Kenley is amazing. I love the guy. And he started the year off better than I've seen him in a long time. You know, he had that drive line trip in the offseason, and I was saying this last week, he had that little extra spring in his step. Swing. And he was lights out the first 2/3 of the season. But this last 3-4 weeks, let's just say 2-3 weeks, he just didn't have that pep, that zing. And I was getting a little worried.
Right.
Not just because he was on my fantasy team and he gave up a couple home runs.
Sure, we talked about this last episode. Sure.
Yeah. And so, you know, Pedro Mora said that the Dodgers confirmed that Kenley is their closer. But he also added that he wouldn't be surprised if they got a little more creative as the series unwinds. And that, you know, that because that's what I was thinking.
And so what does that mean, creative?
You know, based on the lineup, right? If it's like lefty dominant and maybe Dodgers have a three-run lead against Milwaukee, who are all lefties, maybe they bring in a lefty to combat, you know, for the ninth inning, even though it's a save opportunity. I'm not saying they're going to do it this series, but if they make it past, I don't know. They're saying, though, Dodgers are saying that Kenley is the man, and which is great because he needs the confidence.
Yeah,
I'm totally okay with that. But I was a little, you know, I figured, hey, I got the choice, I'll ask him, and, you know. So, at least for now, that is the case. So, I'm stoked. I mean, I think Kenley thrives in the moment. I think he'll like it in Texas, right? It's at sea level. I don't know. Is Dallas a little higher up? I don't know. It's still pretty low, right?
Yeah.
Well, that is the, it's the plains. It's all flat. He's going to be great. I'm stoked. Now, a pitcher who needs no introduction would be Shane Bieber, winning the Triple Crown.
That's pretty outstanding.
For the first time.
I think that pretty much assures him the
the Cy Young?
The American League Cy Young.
I hope so. I don't know what else he has to do to win Cy Young.
It'd be quite an upset if he didn't at this point, right?
I award you no points.
That would be blasphemous and absurd. He is just insane, man. I mean, 8 wins, 1.63 ERA, 122 strikeouts. Now, he captured the 2020 Major League Triple Crown, the AL Triple Crown, but also really the Major League because Darvish tied him in wins, but nobody beat him in any other category in either league.
Yeah. Right.
Trevor Bauer had a 1.73 ERA in the National League.
Which is impressive.
It's very impressive, especially for Bauer, you know.
And Darvish himself was just 2.01.
Yeah, just over 2, especially for Darvish, too. It's incredible bounce back.
Certainly performed better this year than he has in past seasons, but again, of course, missing 102 games.
Well, I mean, really, let's just hope that he doesn't tip his pitches in the World Series. But then again, he's not going to be playing the Astros. Well,
and he's not going to be playing for the Dodgers either.
And DeGrom was the second in MLB with 104 strikeouts. But, of course, that's the National League. So Bieber also became the fastest pitcher to reach 100 strikeouts in a season, needing only 62 and a third innings. And I bet people who won their fantasy league this year probably had Bieber on their team. Or maybe Fernando Tatis, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
We're both.
And Bieber's 41.1 strikeout rate is also the highest by a qualified starting pitcher in a season. Now, obviously, this isn't a full season, so stats like that get a little weird, but the stat, his first 200 Ks in a season, that has nothing to do with the short season.
Right.
That's
no,
just incredible.
That's just impressive.
Yeah.
That he was able to do it in such a shortened season.
It's insanely dominant.
He was able to keep that up. I wonder what record might have fallen.
Yeah. Now, all right, let's just get into it. Let's give out some hardware. Might as well. It's getting...
All right.
It's getting really hot.
So since we agree on the American League Cy Young,
sure,
we should talk about the National League Cy Young.
Give it to me.
Well, I think there's really only two people that we can really talk about, and we've mentioned both of their names already.
100%.
That would be Bauer or Darvish.
Oh, I thought you were going to go DeGrom, but yeah, you're right. Darvish.
I think DeGrom did some great things, but we're talking about the greater overall pitching performance. DeGrom, you know, had the unfortunate
luck of being on the Mets.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say. So I mean, and that shouldn't really count against someone getting the Cy Young, but if you factor in everything, I think just the overall body of work by Bauer and Darvish is more impressive than DeGrom.
100%.
I would say flip a coin. I think solid argument can be made to both, but I think just looking at where their names appear on all of the different categories, I would say probably overall Darvish had the better year.
Really?
Yeah.
Now you see, I gotta go.
He would get my vote this year.
Is it just because of the wins?
No, it's not just because of the wins. I mean, he's top five in all of the major categories.
That's true.
And most of the time finishes above Bauer in a lot of the lesser categories.
Well, you know, for me, ERA is everything. I think that should hold more weight than any strikeouts or wins combined, really. And so in that sense, I got to give it to Bauer. But also, because he's the only other pitcher to have, besides DeGrom and Bieber, to have over 100 strikeouts. Well, he didn't have over. He had 100 on the dot. But triple-digit strikeouts in a 60-game season is pretty impressive. Mix into that a sub-2 ERA. I got to give it to Bauer, man. I got to give it to him.
I would not get upset over that pick. Yeah. I really wouldn't. It's toss-up, like I said. It's just, I don't know.
Now, a notable...
Giving it to Bauer would also be a nice stick it to Manfred.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah. You know, I got to admit, I think we touched on this last week as well, but we're just going to be a broken record this week. You know, I've made a complete 180 with Bauer, man. You know, when he cut his finger on the stupid drone in the ALDS or the ALCS, I think it was.
That was a pretty boneheaded mistake.
That was just like, dude, come on, bro. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's up there with Madison Bumgarner on an ATV. It's just like, but that's even dumber because it's just, come on, it's the playoffs, man. At least Bumgarner had the foresight to not do it during the playoffs.
I think Bumgarner's worse because, I mean, on an ATV is definitely a dangerous activity, especially when you compare it to flying a drone.
Well, that's true. No, but he was repairing it or something.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Even still, I mean,
I know
it was a boneheaded mistake, yes, but it wasn't as like I'm making a mistake by repairing this.
It's
drone.
Not normally
he
dangerous.
He is right. It's not normally dangerous.
Yeah. Right.
There's danger, but not mortal wounding type of danger that you can. You know, it's just typical of ATV.
Yeah. And I think Trevor Bauer, along with Foolish Baseball, you watch this Foolish on YouTube. It's like the greatest channel on YouTube.
No, I haven't said I'll have to do some
dive. I think I subscribe to like two people on YouTube, even though I watch YouTube probably at some point every day because it's, you know, it's on my TV. Once YouTube got on my TV, it was like, it's
this
over.
Is it.
It's all over.
Yeah.
But Foolish Baseball is the greatest.
Foolish
it's
baseball?
The greatest channel.
Okay.
It's the greatest channel.
I'll have to. I've gone down some.
It's amazing.
Some crazy YouTube rabbit
best.
Holes this
I
summer.
Love this guy
but,
Bailey is, and Bailey, I know you're listening, buddy. You know, come on the show because you're this guy's like in his early 20s and he's just killing it. He makes the best baseball videos. Anyway, Trevor right. Bauer though is a very close second and maybe even getting more because he just has way more content.
Well,
on there. And he is, you know, I don't want to see...
He's also a major leaguer. There's
yeah, like, but, you know, that's the thing, man. Like, no other major leaguer is doing stuff like this. Right. No other major leaguer is showing you, you know, the locker room, showing you how the mail works, showing... Like, there are shows like Backstage Dodgers, and I know the A's have a show like that, but it's like, you have to have cable to watch those things.
And 2 years...
You know, it's silly. Yeah. And to appeal to the younger audience, which is apparently what MLB claims to want, Bauer and, you know, people like Tim Anderson are doing the best job, you know. Even Bryce Harper, you know, I'll give him a lot of credit for just for showing emotion, for having fun, yeah. You know, for being a little bit outspoken.
I love seeing the guys looking like they're having fun out on the field.
Now, if Bryce Harper was in the West, I might not feel, but just objectively speaking. And so anyway, that's what I'm saying. Like, I've made a complete 180 on this guy because I used to think he was just like a middling pitcher, and he's super analytical, Trevor Bauer, that is, you know, extremely, you know, he monitors his blood like 5 times a day. Like, the guy's crazy, you know, he's all these gadgets and stuff. But this year kind of proved it. This year kind of proved that, wow, he actually made a complete transition from a replacement level pitcher, or maybe a slightly above replacement level, because he would get a lot of Ks, but his ERA would always be inflated. Now, a lot of that might have been because he was in the American League, but now in the National League, and in no picnic of a park either. I mean, Great American is no fun pitching.
Being a bit of a bandbox,
he has just, you know, I'm really happy for the guy. You know, it's cool to see him really do well, and you know, maybe shut up a lot of people like Aubrey Huff, who he's always fighting with.
Or you?
Yeah, or me? Yeah, exactly. He got me. I'll admit what I've got. You know, that's pretty cool. Yeah, and I'm telling you, that Bauer Bites show, it's a little cheesy, but it's great, man. I just like to see baseball players talk about the game. You know, on that show, it's just like five baseball players and they eat dinner and stuff. Alex Wood was on there because Woody was a Red for a while. Now he's back with the Dodgers, but, you know, he played with the Reds for a while, you know, got to know Trevor a lot. He was on one of these episodes, and Bauer was talking about how it's, you know, they make it so hard for individuals or players to like promote themselves because they don't really have like a designated wing in their front office for that. And then Alex Wood was talking about how the Dodgers, it's like they are incredible with that, you know, because I mean, obviously it's LA, but they have whole teams just with that. Like, they'll take amazing pictures and ask if you want to post it, blah, 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 stuff like that, you know? And like, to me, like, I'm a crusty old man, so I don't, that stuff doesn't excite me. But if you're like a younger guy coming up, it's really nice to have older people saying that it's okay, you know, like validating your desires. Like, it's a different world, man. You know, yeah. These guys need to promote themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And social media is free, and it's a perfect way, and it's a win-win. I mean, the Dodgers have fans all over the globe. That's not for no reason, you know.
Yeah.
The Cincinnati Reds don't. And a lot of these teams, and I didn't know any of this. I didn't know any of this, the inner workings of sort of the social aspect of baseball teams and players and how some teams do it way better than others. You know, you kind of just expect everybody does it the same way, but that's definitely not the case. And so hearing players talk about playing for different teams and the vastly different experience they get is really interesting.
Yeah,
especially just as a casual fan.
And there has been in the past, there's been guys that have talked about differences between teams and enjoying the experience of playing for certain teams more than others, which is why you get some guy who's been a journeyman gets to a particular team, does really well, and then maybe retires shortly after that experience, and, you know, identifies as being a member of that team more than any other team that they play for.
Yeah.
And it happens often. You see, it's like, oh, I love my time being a San Francisco Giant. Even though I was going there for a year and a half, it was a great experience. Loved the fans, loved the city, loved the team, all the personnel. It was just great. I had a great year, and I want to be remembered as a Giant. You know, no.
Yeah.
And there are other teams. You know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers. You hear stories like that. Very few people say, "Oh, I loved my time as a Red." Unless they were a career Red.
Yeah, they like their teammates, but yeah, the
organization
culture,
itself.
Yeah. Culture matters.
Yeah, absolutely does.
From
it makes
the ground
a difference.
Up, 100%.
It makes a difference in any sport, in any business. Culture matters. Whether you're playing the game or trying to make money or running a government, the culture matters. the culture matters.
That is very true.
You know what I like.
Now, switching gears back to batters, hitters, offense.
Hitters, offense. You're talking about the MVP?
I'm talking about the MVP.
We're not going to give the MVP to a pitcher?
No.
No, not this year.
You know, American League, you know, maybe. But, no,
I mean, we're talking about the most valuable player. You're telling me that the most valuable player was not a pitcher?
No, man. I really think Jose Abreu was the catalyst of the White Sox, and they would not be where they are without him.
I wholeheartedly agree.
And he was the most valuable player in that entire league.
I would totally agree.
We're on the same page on this one?
Totally. I don't think there's one player in the American League that had more of an impact and the numbers up at the top of every list.
Yeah. Yeah.
that, you know, yeah, is clearly the MVP of the American League is Abreu. And I do hope that he gets the recognition. And if I was a voting member of the media, I would he would definitely have my vote this year.
Yeah, I like Jose Abreu a lot. This guy is just quietly really good. And this year he was excellent.
And he's
when it mattered the most.
And he's been quietly good year good
since he started.
Since his beginning of his career.
Oh yeah. He's a career 290 hitter. I mean, with power. Yeah. As a first baseman, that is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
Yeah, he finishes the year with 19 home runs, 76 hits, 60 ribbies, and 2.8 WAR. While batting .317. I mean, his OPS is .987. His OPS plus is .166. I mean, that's crazy.
It's pretty phenomenal year. He had a phenomenal year. Again, some of those percentages maybe inflated because of the length, but just the sheer dominance in the time that was given, no question.
Exactly. And for a pitcher to win MVP also, it's you got to be
Dominant.
I mean, last pitcher to do it was Kershaw, right? And then before that, Verlander. And it's been a long time.
It's happened a handful of time, and there's usually a gap in between.
Yeah. And that's only because, you know, pitchers shouldn't, in my opinion, win MVP unless they are just that clubhouse catalyst because they only play once every five games. But if they are that guy and the teams know they are, then usually or sometimes they do win, and it's not completely out of their own possibility.
Usually when
Clayton won the triple crown.
When a pitcher will win the MVP, there's very little doubt by inside or outside that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That this guy made a difference when he was out on the field, so much so that you felt it when he wasn't.
Now, and one benefit or one added thing, if Abreu does win the MVP, he'll have the highest jersey number of any MVP in history. 79. Really? Yeah, 79. Wow.
Okay. I thought you were going to say, like, you know, like 40. And it's like, well, really? Yeah. Well, but it was 79. Yeah, okay,
and
I'm not going to.
You know what? And you had a little jersey tidbit last week as well. So
right,
you,
yeah.
Hey, you know, there you go. That's an if. Now, here's where it gets a little more interesting. What about the National League?
Well, National League has a lot of candidates. There's no doubt.
100%.
There was, up to a week ago, they were talking about five players in the National League that were in the conversation. And I think they're in the conversation because of the philosophy of, well, the MVP is not necessarily about numbers, although numbers play a big and important part of it.
Yeah.
But MVP, most valuable player, who is the guy that made the most impact by virtue of being on the field? I mean, there is a number now, WAR, that helps to quantify it, but it doesn't necessarily equate to all of the different intangibles of what makes a player special and making the other people around him better as well. I mean, I can say,
God, you're making me nervous here. Now I like.
Well, I'm gonna say a guy like a guy like Mike Yastrzemski this year. He was one of those players that was said to be in the conversation.
Oh, a month for ago, MVP. For sure. Yeah.
Well, even last week he was there, and
that was sort of contingent on the Giants making the playoffs.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
It's not supposed to be, but
the success of the team does factor into it because I think only just because that player is so impactful that it does elevate the entire team to get to the next level is an important aspect of being an MVP like Abreu was this year for the White Sox.
Yeah.
If not for him, the White Sox would not be the number
seven
seed in the American League.
Giolito getting no-hitter.
They have a good team, and they played. But without Abreu's constant presence in the lineup, they would not have done as well overall.
That's true.
Individual performances size without Abreu, they would not have done as well as a team.
100%.
And it was evident with the Giants. The Giants were a totally different team with without Yastrzemski than when he was in the lineup. They were far better. But given all of that, my vote, who I would give it to for the National League this year, would be Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves. It was pretty phenomenal, and the Braves had a great year. They had a lot of great performances. They have a couple players in the conversation for MVP between him and who is it? Looking at it.
What do you mean, who is it?
Well,
how about Mr. War? How about the guy with the highest WAR in all of baseball, one Mookie Betts, who, by the way, did it while playing with a new team.
Well, I mean, Betts is no doubt about that. That he's really good. But what
he's really good, yes.
But it could be
that's
argued.
Not who you were. That's not who you were going to say.
Well, no, I was going to say
this is going to get good.
Well, let me.
Well, he can't be that good if you can't think of his name.
Find my list.
Juan Soto, 100%. I know that's who you're going to say. If that's not who you were going to say, the door is to your right, sir.
In the car, I mean, okay. I was Ozuna as in the conversation as a teammate.
He's in the conversation
of Freeman. Freeman is my pick. I don't think the Braves do quite as well without Freeman this year. He's a spark plug in that team. As great as Betts is or anything, it'd be argued that the Dodgers would have done just as well without
Bellinger,
Betts there.
With Bellinger hitting under 200 for the first like 3 weeks of the season, I don't know. Now Corey Seager was arguably the catalyst in that team, even though Mookie was the excitement and Mookie was the fire and Mookie was, you know, the sort of life. I don't know, the excitement. Seager, though, was this every day, I'm going to hit 300, I'm going to get home runs.
Mr. Consistency.
My God. You know, I'm going to play errorless baseball. God, I love Corey, man.
With using that argument, though, would you rather be missing Seager from the lineup or Betts from the lineup?
Don't make me answer
but,
that.
But here, but if you say, if you would rather have Corey... I'd be not missing Corey Seager over Betts. Can Betts really be the MVP of the league if he isn't the MVP of the Dodgers?
But he is the MVP of the Dodgers, though. But
in terms of numbers, yes. But he just said that Seager was that catalyst. If Seager wasn't that, what wasn't sort of, there being set in the table?
Seager's been there for a while, and he's had a lot of ups and downs. You know, just because of health. And maybe it's just my own personal emotion coming through, but I think every Dodger fan felt the same way watching Seager finally become Seager, you know, with just uninhibited and be the rookie Seager, you know, just never miss.
Find a stroke. Just
baseball,
you know,
acumen through
the
roof.
The soft hands and the, intelligent player, absolutely.
And power stroke also. Now, look, I'm giving it to Mookie. And Freeman, 100%, you know, it's hard to argue against Freeman, and I love seeing Freeman, you know, because it's crazy that Freeman's never even finished in the top three in MVP voting in his career, and he's just a perennial all-star.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's a beast. And this year, he really proved it with an OPS plus of 186.
And he plays with a lot of joy, and
crazy.
It's super fun to watch.
Yeah, he's the modern Chipper Jones for that team. I mean, I don't even think Chipper would be mad at that. But Mookie, man, 292, 366, 562, OPS plus 927, I'm sorry, 149, OPS 927, 16 home runs, 64 hits, 39 ribbies, 47 runs, 10 stolen bases, but really it's the WAR, because MVP isn't just about the bat. MVP is about fielding, you know, and this is why a lot of times baseball writers will say, all things being equal, who has the hardest job, right? If he's, is he a shortstop or a first baseman? We'll give it to the shortstop, you know? And Mookie's defensive prowess is really unmatched in the National League in his position. So in that sense, that's why his WAR is 3.4, and that's why he's the only person in the National League to have a WAR above 3. You know, Freddie Freeman, God bless him, he's a great hitter. The guy hit 341. I mean, he's no slouch.
2.9 WAR.
2.9 WAR, exactly. You know, is his job as difficult? You know, is his body able to weather storms easily because he sort of stands there all day? I mean, I know first base isn't just, you don't just stand there all day. I know that, but you're also not throwing 300 foot putouts from right field.
I think that the first baseman, the first baseman's job is, in terms of difficulty, is dependent on the defensive prowess of his fellow infielders.
Oh,
you know, that if he's constantly digging out balls in the dirt, catching those short hops from third base, shortstop, second base, you know, if he has to, if he's getting a lot of stretch putouts, that's a difficult job for a first baseman to be able to catch everything, and fielding percentage for a first baseman is dependent on that. And the better your overall your infield is, the easier job it is for the first baseman, because it's going to get better throws.
Yeah.
On, you know,
no, 100%.
60% of the plays, you know, the put out is at first base, it seems like. So there's a lot of opportunity for mistakes. So there's a lot of, you know, difficulty in terms of just chances.
Wait, say that again?
Well, I mean, the difficulty... For things like the fielding percentage.
Oh, fielding percentage.
The first baseman is going to have a lot more chances.
Yeah.
During the course of a season to make an error. You know, so high fielding percentage for... any first baseman is gonna come with a lot more chances than almost any other position.
But that's why
WAR.
But see, WAR takes that into account. They take into account, you know, the position and other people that play your position and replacement players that play your position, and so it's all kind of equalized. This is why a lot of people use WAR, because it is, and it's also like OPS plus. It's ballpark specific. You know, they're. It sort of goes to weigh those variables as best as kind of we have right now as a metric. Again, I can't argue with Freddie Freeman. And if he gets it, I'm not going to be, you know, totally mad like I was when Ryan Braun won the MVP over Matt Kemp. Because everybody knows Matt Kemp was the MVP.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, the one person you didn't say, though, was Juan Soto, who is incredible.
Yeah. And it's really... It's really hard to, in the National League, that's why it's going to be an interesting to see who actually gets it, because Juan Soto, there's no doubt,
he's
fantastic.
Insane. And I can only lament the fact and wonder, what if Juan Soto didn't get that false positive and he didn't miss 2 weeks on my roster in fantasy baseball? What if?
Yeah.
What if? And the same goes with MVP voting. He won't get MVP because 2 weeks ends up being like 20% of the season. So in that sense, I don't think he has a chance. But his numbers, he still put up the same amount of home runs as Freddie Freeman. He still had 13 jacks. It's just crazy, man. He started 2.1 WAR, Juan Soto, but he hit 351. 490, 695, OPS of 1.185, and the kicker, the OPS plus. Now, we've been talking about Jose Abreu had a 166. You know, 100 is good. Or that's about, you know, anything over 100 is good. A Jose Abreu 166, he gets it, right? Freddie Freeman 186, and so that's why I can't argue with you. But Juan Soto, 212. That's Babe Ruth territory, man. I mean, that's Juiced Bonds territory. Like, that's crazy.
It's pretty incredible. Juan and we're Soto talking about we're talking about he won the rookie of the year.
Of course.
So I mean, there's no
and he hit that home run in the World Series that I don't think has ever come down against the Astros.
Might not have.
I'll always, even though the Nationals beat the Dodgers and knocked him out of the 2019 playoffs, I'll always love Juan Soto for beating up on the Astros. I always have a soft spot for that guy. Now it's funny, or it's not really funny for him, but it's interesting that neither of us brought up the name Fernando Tatis Jr., who only a few weeks ago probably would have been the overwhelming favorite to win the MVP in the National League.
Yeah, he had a the last couple of weeks of the season he fell off a little bit. Hopefully it won't. He'll pick it back up here for the postseason and be. But we'll see. They did pull him out early of the game on Sunday.
Well,
not in like the fourth inning.
Yeah, you know, he had a pretty rough September. I mean, he was, let's say, a little bit better than a replacement player. He wasn't horrible, but he wasn't the Fernando that we saw in that entire first month. And
and he's not in the top 10 of overall WAR.
No, home runs, yeah, but not definitely not WAR. He hit .277. You see, that's the thing, because he and Manny were just crushing the ball, man. Just hitting over 300, hitting home runs, getting hits with guys on base. You know, they were raking. But he finally hit a couple home runs against the Giants this last series. But he hadn't hit one in over 20 days before that.
It was a 20-day. I wasn't aware that it was a 20-day.
20 days. Wow. Yeah, and his batting average in September dropped to .239. So that brought his overall batting average down to .277. You know, he still finished with 17 home runs, 11 stolen bases, which is nothing to sneeze at. But, when he was cold, Mookie and Freeman were hot, and Juan Soto was just on another planet. Right. It's just sad for Soto because he wasn't, he never even had it. It was a false positive, man. That's brutal.
It's a crowded field. There's no doubt. Someone is going to get a snub, and the fan bases are going to be upset. But between the three or four of them, there's no wrong choice for MVP. It's just who is the most right. Yeah, it's...
I'll quote you on that one.
I don't think that ultimately, you know, the choice between Betts, Freeman, and Soto, that one of them is, they're all deserving. Only one of them can get it.
Yeah.
You know, so since they're all so deserving, it's not going to be like, you know, someone who, you know, this we didn't mention at all.
Right. There's no dark horse in this.
There's
race.
No dark horse. They're all, you know, there. It's going to be a photo finish. And, you know, it'll be win, place, and show. It's just, you know, it'll be by a nose, and people will be upset, but you can't be so upset because they really were that good.
So who gets third then? Because I think you're right. I think Freeman will get it, and I think Mookie will probably get second, even though he has a higher WAR. But who's going to get third? Soto or Tatis? Or is there somebody else?
I think Soto.
Or is it Bieber? You know, I mean, I don't know. It's crazy.
I think it'll be Soto.
I mean,
in third.
Bauer. Sorry, not Bieber. Yeah.
I think it'll be Soto in third.
It should be Soto.
Just because of that East Coast thing
bias.
And
a .212 OPS plus. Jesus Christ!
It's pretty.
I know he missed
2 ridiculous.
Weeks, but come on, you know. Usually, you miss 2 weeks, and you're going to be even more rusty. You're going to start off a little slower than the rest of the guys. He didn't start off slow.
No, he was on fire when they broke camp. He tested positive, and he came back after those 2 weeks of quarantine and just knocked the cover off the ball.
It's brutal because for like that last week, he had like 4 or 5 like clear tests, and they still wouldn't let him play because of protocol. Brutal. Now, I'm not prepared for any of this, but I am worried about what would happen if this happens in the postseason, and I don't think they're going to ever stop. So I think if a team gets an outbreak, they're sort of SOL, and they got to just bring up some, like, I guess like the Marlins did, and it didn't really seem to hurt the Marlins. So, you know what? Maybe it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, the Marlins went through so many. I was reading. I didn't write it down. I should have, of course. But I did read an article where they're talking about the number of roster moves. It's like an insane. It's like 147 roster moves in the 60 games, and most of them
happened. They beat the 162 record.
Yeah, I mean, in order to juggle those 2 weeks with the Marlins,
with nobody.
I don't know how they did it. I mean, if there's an MVP for the general manager, I think the Marlins might have done it because he did some.
Is that Jeter?
No, he's the owner. He's
president?
He's part of the owner. He's part of the ownership, not the GM. I don't know. It was a crazy year, crazy results, crazy voting.
And that brings us. I'm sorry.
I don't know. We have a rookie of the year. Do you want to talk about rookie of the year?
I always forget about the rooks, but I guess just because I'm in the West and I saw a lot of his games, I don't know. Cronenworth, does he get it? I don't know. I honestly didn't even look at these rooks.
You didn't think? Well, I got Kyle Lewis.
Okay, yeah.
Lewis had pretty outstanding numbers.
That's West, right? That's West.
So. The Mariners. So he's slash line 262, 364, and 437 over 58 games, 11 home runs, 37 runs, and 28 RBIs.
Not bad.
Not bad, especially for not a very good team.
Well, that's true.
And
in a pretty tough division, too.
Yeah.
Now, let me just look at cronies over here. Jake Cronenworth, 285, 354, 477. These guys are actually really close.
They are.
Cronenworth has a 128 OPS plus, whereas Lewis has a 126. Cronenworth's OPS is 831. Lewis's is 801. I got to give it to my boy in San Diego. I don't know.
All right.
But who else did you have on there? Because I'm not even thinking about rooks. I always forget about the rooks.
I mean, you were the one who told me to look at the rooks. So I looked.
Shame.
I mean, there's some great rookies, especially in the National League this year. There's no doubt about it. Pitchers and hitters.
Oh, okay.
Tony Gonsolin.
Except for he's the ignoble. Oh, Tony Gonsolin. Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to give it to Tony. How about that?
But in the American League,
or Dustin, he wasn't technically a rookie, I guess, this year, is he?
American League, there's also some great choices as well. I mean,
such as
Luis Robert.
White Sox. Jesus, I didn't show up today. Sorry, Luis Robert. Luis Robert's dirty.
I mean, just a .233 average, but
was that all he ended up with?
But. 11 Ouch. Home runs, 31 RBIs, just slashing .233, .302.
What else you got?
.346.
What else do you got?
In the American League.
Yeah, I thought Robert was doing better than that.
Will Castro, the shortstop for the Tigers. Ryan Mountcastle for the Orioles. Both had decent years, but played less games. Both of those, they only played 36 games each, as opposed to 56 that Robert Lewis played.
I was going to say, I'll give it to Mountcastle just because he kept his batting average up. I don't want to give anybody rookie if they're not hitting 260. I mean, you got to hit at least 260, bro, Luis Robert,
By that, Will Castro, we're talking about 349 with... with six home runs,
and he had like 130 at bats. Yeah, okay. You know what? I changed my mind. You got it, Willie Castro. I don't care. It's American League Central. All what right. do I know? 150 OPS plus. You got it, Willie. You know what? You got the West Coast bias.
Shazam!
I don't. is that all you got for the rooks?
That's what it's
Dan Plesac probably would have got it, except for that he went all casino haywire and went nuts, and he'll end up pitching pretty well for the Indians at the postseason, I'm sure. But that's not where you want to be. Yeah, I'll give it to Crony just because I saw that guy just right. hit the Dodgers a lot this season.
Fair enough.
Crony, and you know, I'll give it to Willie. And that brings us to this week's
Ignoble Award of the Week.
All right, the Ignoble Award comes this week comes with a little bit of a moral to it, I think. All right, good. There's another almost spit take there.
Oh my god! Wow, I don't know why that almost got me. Yeah, I was mid sip. Jesus. Oh man, what is going on today?
So we have in the Dominican Republic, the Nobel Award comes out of the Dominican Republic this week. It's a little bit tragic.
Man.
Pittsburgh Pirates prospect O'Neill Cruz was allegedly driving drunk and was in a collision with a motorcycle that killed three people, a 23-year-old, a 20-year-old, and a 19-year-old. Faces 5 years if he's convicted. Yeah, folks, don't drink and drive. It's not good. And it's not to say that there's details of this case, because I did look into it a little bit, that the other the motorcycle that was involved on the other end of this collision where the fatalities were was apparently happened at night, and they were three on this motorcycle.
Yeah, it's like the numbers don't add up here.
And they didn't have lights on. Everyone was out after a curfew. Ugh. Apparently, there's a curfew in the Dominican, so they were out late. The motorcycle didn't have lights on, and there were three people on this motorcycle. Apparently, I have seen this. This happens a lot in some of these developing countries. I've seen entire families.
Oscar Tavares died in a car crash, right? In the Dominican?
Last year,
2 years ago? Yeah.
It might have been, yeah. Tragic things happen, but I mean, I think just because it's not a good idea to go drinking and then get into a car and go driving any time of day, anywhere in the world, it's unsafe. So that's why O'Neill Cruz has the Ignoble Award this week.
Man, that's really bad. Obviously it's horrible.
And we don't want to make light of it. It's a tragic thing, and that's why it's a moral kind of thing. You don't want to drink and drive. It's just not a good idea. And that's all I got to say about that.
Hey, it's my turn now? Thanks a lot. Jesus.
Yeah, Christ. Go ahead and follow that up. Hey,
my God.
So the playoffs start tomorrow. I love being able to say that.
That is true.
I want to know two things. I want to know your predictions. I want to know what you hope for, which could be different. You want something to happen. It can be both. Yes. I think in your case it may very well be.
Well,
but
okay.
But it could be different. I mean, I think the important ones, the LDS series, who's going to make it? Who's going to win the World Series?
Hold on. You're getting a little ahead of yourself.
I'm getting way ahead of myself. I'm excited about this.
I can tell. We got to figure out this wild card series. I know this isn't normal, and your brain probably doesn't work that way. Mine doesn't either, but we got to figure this out. You know, tomorrow I'm going to be glued to that A's and Sox game because that series is going to be bitter. That's going to be three games, and I want to see the A's win it, but I like the White Sox, man. I almost wish the A's were playing the Yankees and just beat the Yankees, get it over with. But you know what? The A's, man, they haven't... since Chapman's been gone, you know, they've...
Yeah, Chapman was a big loss.
God,
today. I mean,
man,
Chapman
yeah.
would have been in that conversation for the AL MVP.
They've been limited to three runs or fewer in six of their final eight games since he's been gone, and two runs or fewer in four of those eight.
It's tough to lose your MVP. It's tough to lose that corner infielder.
Yeah,
it's
platinum glove winner over there.
Yeah, that hurts the A's chances. I still think they're a good enough team to be able to make it.
Well, they're the huge upside for them is that if their bullpen stays as good as it has been, which is a major league leading 2.76 bullpen ERA, and if their starters can at least get five or six quality innings, they should be fine.
Yes.
I think they should be fine. But if Luis Robert starts getting crazy, and obviously Abreu and Tim Anderson are dangerous, I don't know. That's why I'm thinking that series goes three. But the A's have to end their drought. They have to end their,
their first round
quick
drought.
Out drought. Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, that's tough. I mean, but the same thing goes with the Twins, obviously. Now, everybody, as we already said, this side of the Milky Way wants to see the Twins beat the Trastros. Yes. Yankees-Cleveland. I'm going Cleveland, man. I mean, how are the Yankees going to beat Bieber? I know Cole is really good, but Bieber has crazy movement, and he can just spot the ball wherever he wants. But honestly, that'll probably be the more fun game to watch, perhaps, or maybe the least fun game to watch, I guess I should say, because it'll probably be very low scoring. Tampa and Toronto, I mean, you know, that's, you got to give it to Tampa. We got Blake Snell starting. I'm sure that's a lock. I'm not doing what you asked me to do. Okay, NLDS, Dodgers are in it. They beat San Diego. They go to the championship series against, dare I say, the Reds or the Cincinnati Buds. Now, that's
really,
what I want. That's what I want to happen.
That's what you want.
That's what I want to happen. I don't think that will happen.
So what you want to see is a Reds-Dodgers NLDS.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If not just for, well, and I don't know if Alex Wood is with the team, but Alex Wood has intimate knowledge of the Reds, you know, and obviously the Dodgers. So,
right.
And Alex Wood, don't forget, was the only pitcher in the 2017 World Series who knew or who took precautions against the Astros and who actually won the game in game four. You know, he's very smart. I like Alex Wood a lot. And that could be the advantage for the Dodgers against the Reds. I mean, aside from the fact that they're clearly the better team, but you never know in the postseason. That's what I want, but I'm assuming the Braves will pull it out because, I mean, come on, they got Max Fried. Max Fried hasn't lost a game this year. How crazy is that? We were talking about the Cy Young and everybody else, but honestly, if this was 30, 40 years ago, Max Fried probably wins it.
Right, because of the
7-0, man, yeah. A 100% win percentage? I mean, that's crazy, you know? So, I don't know. Obviously, that means I'm ruling out the Cubs and the Marlins and St. Louis and San Diego, but San Diego's dirty, man. If they can face the Dodgers, they'll give the Dodgers a run for their money because they know them really well. So anyway, Dodgers beat Cincinnati, Dodgers A's World Series. That's what I want.
And I am,
I don't know.
To be honest, I am a little bit disappointed that there's no possibility of the Padres and the Dodgers meeting in the NLCS because I think the intensity and the familiarity would between these two teams would be historic.
Is this no accident? Is this for like TV viewership? Because everybody on the West Coast wouldn't watch it? Is that what's happening?
I mean, it's possible, but I don't know. I don't know. But it looks like, you know, 1, 8, 4, and 5 seeds are in the same bracket on both sides. So that's just how they drew it up, and that's where the records fell.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It is consistent on both sides. That's true. All right, so what do you got? You're leaving me hanging.
Well, okay, so what I would like to see happen on the National League side, I would like, my preference would be to see a San Diego-Atlanta NLDS.
Really?
Or NLCS, rather. NLCS. That's what I would like to see. What I think will happen...
Here we go.
Is I think it's going to be the Braves and the Dodgers.
Yeah.
In the NLCS, it's just the two best teams. They're both playing really well, and I think that's just what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's not what I want to happen necessarily, but I think that's what will happen. American League side, again, what I would like to see. What I think would be the most intriguing fun would be a Twins Tampa ALCS.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be a great series to watch. what I I think
pitching versus hitting. That's as old as baseball gets, right there.
What I think will happen, I think that the A's will prevail. I think it will be a Tampa-Oakland ALCS.
Oh, man. And that would be a rematch of last year.
It will be a little bit of a rematch last year. It'll be great because these teams have not faced each other all year. And I just think it'll be great. And that means opposite for me, I think we're going to have what I would like to see, of course, in the World Series would be an Atlanta-Minnesota World Series. I think that would be very intriguing. I would like to see that.
How dare you?
But I think what will happen is that we will have a rematch of the 1988 World Series.
Ooh!
I think that will ultimately happen.
Oh, yeah!
That sounds rough.
Who do you think the Dodgers will be playing in the World Series?
Who do I think? Oh, man.
And yeah, who would you think and who would you like to see? Who would you like to see?
I told you, I want to see the A's.
Yeah. And who do you think they will see?
I'm sorry, A's fans. I think... Man, I don't want to answer that question. I don't know.
That's the thing.
What's your prediction?
Who's
the Yankees.
You think the
Yeah, and I hate that. And I don't want
to. So who's gonna make the ALCS? Though? Who do you think is gonna then I know what
Yankees and the Rays.
Yeah.
And then the Yankees somehow just beat the Rays, even though the Rays have been beating up on the Yankees all season. Yeah.
So the ALCS is gonna be the Yankees and who? Are the Yankees gonna
play?
They can only meet in the ALDS. Yankees and Rays are in the same bracket. They'll meet October 5th.
I'm sorry. We're missing the A's. Step. Yeah, I got it. Ah, man. The A's and the Twins are so close. But because the A's don't have Chapman and the Twins are the freaking Bombas. I mean, I got to give it to the Twins, man.
So you're
the Twins have Maeda, and so Maeda's a robot, you know.
Right. So you're predicting a Twins Yankees ALCS with the Yankees prevailing? Is that what you're telling me? I think that's what you're telling me.
No. I'm in pain right now. This isn't fun. No, you know what? Rays. Twins. How about that?
Rays Twins in the ALCS.
Yeah.
All right.
But I want to see the A's Rays.
Got it.
Because that one game wild card last year is just, oh, God, it just left me so cold.
Right.
You know, the A's. Yeah. That's it.
All right. So
it's so confusing. Like, we'll say, we predicted the winner, and then people will be
who's going to win the commissioner's trophy this year?
Your Los Angeles Dodgers.
I'm so sorry that you're wrong this year. I really am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Liquor in the front, poker in the rear.
That's it.
Deal
man.
Them
that's
out.
All,
yeah. No.
That's all I got. That's it. Yeah. I'm done. Man, it is so hot in here. It's 100 degrees.
Well, I'm sweating like Roger Ebert.
And me too. Quite literally. So let's get to last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question. I recall we had a really good question. Did we get any? Well, what was the question, first of all?
Last week's trivia question. Who has the most RBIs in a 60-game stretch? Very simple. You know, we've been doing a 60 right. theme for all these trivia questions. Quite simple.
Did we get any guesses this
Yeah. Let me see. We got Mike in Oregon says J.D. Martinez. And by the way, J.D., what happened to you, man? I drafted you like second this year. Third? Second? I got you second this year, man. He's hitting like 240. No. Sorry, Mike. In 2017, though, J.D. did have a 58-game stretch between July 23rd and September 27th, where he had 29 home runs and 65 ribbies, which is pretty crazy. But that's not the most. It's hard to believe.
It is.
We got Scott in Oakland says, He asks. He's like, was it Josh Donaldson in 2015? He just asks that. I'll take that as an answer. No, but Donaldson, let me see, did have... Oh, wow, he had an impressive 2015, obviously. I almost forgot about this, man. That's crazy. Yeah, he ended up beating Mike Trout for the MVP that year. And in 60 games between July 21st and September 11th, he drove in 68. Which, wow, actually, I do believe is the highest total from the last decade. Man, Donaldson, speaking of the Bombas, he's going to... Yeah, this is going to be the Twins year. No, that's, sorry, wrong answer. And we got Miranda M. says... It's got to be someone juiced like Mark McGwire.
Oh, that's quite the guess.
It's a really good guess.
That probably would have been my guess ultimately.
And you know, while I was thinking of this question, I actually figured it was probably someone like A-Rod, yeah, or Canseco, or McGwire, yeah, just somebody juiced up, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Grease, but runs batted in, of course, you got to get on base. Doesn't matter how much juice you're on.
Yeah, you got to have a good team.
You got to have at least someone be on base for you before you get that you can drive him home.
Now, the crazy thing is that even though Big Mac did knock in 80 big runs.
80
in 1998. In 98, it's with the 60 games between March 31st and June 13th. That's still not the highest.
That's quite amazing. So what you're telling me is that we're going to have to go much farther back in history to actually find this record.
Well, certainly more than 10 years, because I already gave that away. Right. Yes. Yeah, much, much further back.
Well, I mean, 98, we're talking about, you know, 20 years, 22 years
sure.
ago.
No,
so
further
it's
than
gonna
that.
It's going to be farther than that. Much further than
yeah.
that. Yeah.
In the 20th century, though, this isn't one of those like Cleveland Spiders questions. Okay, this isn't. This is definitely the 20th century post dead ball, as you would probably imagine.
Right.
But no, that would be. Oh wait, do you have a guess?
Well, no, I don't. Mark McGwire would have been my guess,
okay.
But I do know the answer because I my curiosity got the best of me, and I did look this one up.
How dare you? Then, well.
Oh, well, that would be none other than the great Hack Wilson, a Hall of Famer. Hack Wilson.
Oh, yeah. He didn't seem to be hacking much.
But that was
in
1930.
Yeah, in the dog days of summer, July 17th.
90 years ago.
Yeah. 90. Was that 90 years
ago? 90 years ago for 90 RBIs and a 60-game stretch. 90.
That record still stands.
Well, I mean, Mark McGwire with 80, and wow.
Yeah. And that's a lot of Big Macs and juice you got to be consuming to get 80, you know. And yeah. So that record might stand for a long time.
I think you may be right there. It's
or
pretty amazing.
If they get Mookie batting third, perhaps Mookie will break it next season, but you never know.
You got to get on base.
remember to email us the answer baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. You can leave the answer at Twitter.
That's
at
great.
West Coast Bias BB, Podomatic website. You can comment on there. You can't comment on Spotify or Stitcher, as far as I know. So, you know, what are you going to do? But, yeah, Podomatic.com.
Many ways to get a hold of us, but what answer are they going to be leaving us this time?
What question?
Well, you asked them for the answer.
Oh,
what's the question to this answer?
Uh-oh.
I mean, I know you're a fan of Jeopardy, and you like to give the answer before
Indeed.
The question, but...
Indeed, sir.
In this case...
All right, you know what? Let's just do it. Let's do it right here. This is a bit of a trick question. How about that?
A trick question.
It's a tricky year. How about that? But we are going to stick with 60 in a sense.
In a sense?
Yeah. Okay. Who had the lowest ERA over 12-game stretch?
12-game stretch. Oh,
as
because that's as many...
That's 60 games.
That's 60
yeah,
games
that's basically,
on
yeah.
a normal 5...
Right.
...day rotation.
Yeah. BaseballShowPodcast@gmail.com. Who had the lowest ERA over any 60-game stretch? Let us know. I got to get out of here. I am hotter than...
Yeah, let's get that
Cerberus
AC
right
back
now.
On there.
From San Francisco, California, I am... Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul, and remember, baseball is life. The rest... just details.
Go watch some baseball.
Playoffs, baby.